Marjorie was counsellor on relationships, diets, budgets and families. I found two screwdrivers and a hammer in a drawer and was appointed janitor. My London checkout operator experience gave me a certain manner with Andy and John, who worked in Asda and Waitrose supermarkets. John, a human marker of Britain's economic change, was once a North Sea fisherman, but now stacked shelves with Kenyan beans, Spanish peaches, and, we were glad to hear, Nelson apples. Didn't he miss the excitement of life at sea? No, this job's warm and dry and better paid. Carol, a caregiver, told us of the disgraceful behaviour of some clients. Good-looking Jill didn't tell us much, but we gathered she had a great time on holiday in Italy. Tony, from Aberdeen, told us about everything.
I was late and I tried to run, but my leg was sore. I knocked it, you know, when my granny came. You ken, she has the four wee terriers. Och, they make such a mess. She bought us Chinese. Myself, I prefer Indian, but it doesn't agree with Johnny.
And she could work as well as she could talk. A delightful, helpful lass. And, you have my word for it, a dab hand at apple crumble. Its mix of mill towns, dales, cathedrals and busy cities makes Yorkshire proud of its bluff Englishness, demonstrated one coolish evening when we joined 14,000 others at the Northern Proms at Castle Howard. That was the opening scene of Bride's Head Revisited, remember? And bellowed out Jerusalem and Land of Hope and Glory. Great schmaltz. We went to Saltaire, Leeds, Whitby, finding mementos of Yorkshire sons like Captain James Cook, J.B. Priestley, Fred Truman, passing on the way markets and mosques reminding us that most of the county's newborn sons are called Mohammed. Apart from a disaffected few, they seemed to feel just as English as did James, John and Fred. We found a cheap flight to Amsterdam, and then took a tourist coach to Kerkenhof Tulip Gardens. As I recall, 158 such coaches were there that day, and two in every three of their passengers appeared to belong to the Benelux Hip and Knee Replacement Association. In blue-rinsed and bespectacled thousands, they showed what strides Europe has made in orthopaedic surgery as they promenaded past plots of tulips, upright, fringed and floppy. We marvelled at it all, bought Marjorie a pair of clogs, and after a long hunt found the right coach back to Amsterdam. Coach trips are okay, but we prefer trains. Using the simple selection method of sticking a pin into a map of Europe, we'd booked a journey from Austria into Slovenia and back again. After yet another cheap flight to Salzburg, we climbed into the great burgundy-painted carriage which would whistle us to Slovenia's capital, Ljubljana. With a name like that, we liked the place already, and warmed to it even more as we dallied over the charming three-way bridge at its centre. We couldn't understand a word the Slovenians said, but felt welcome nonetheless, and wanted to compliment them every one when we saw statues honouring the fathers of their nation, a poet and an architect. Much more worth celebrating, we thought, than your typical general on horseback or declaiming politician. For the long years when it belonged to Tito's Yugoslavia, Slovenia must have suffered some of those, and their monuments, grey slab-sided offices and apartments, stood hulk-like amongst curly pink 18th-century Baroque halls and churches. We climbed to the castle above the city, where I showed that the warm south was having its effect, remarking to Marjorie, "You know, when I'm looking at red roofs, I'm in the right place." And the next day I said it again, when the train stopped on the journey north and we climbed a vineyard to a plaster statue of the Virgin and looked down on the tiled roofs of Maribor, sleeping in the sun, its fringe of peach and olive trees merging into green pastures sweeping to the hazy Alps. The train carried us round their eastern edge and into Austria. A dour border official hauled open our compartment door, yawned at my EU passport, but lifted heavy eyebrows when Marjorie's Kiwi one meant he could use his stamping machine, and then thumped off down the corridor like a bit player in a World War II movie. Austria was as crisp, clean, beautiful and visitor-friendly as we'd been told, and we played happy tourists in glorious Vienna and Salzburg, whose charm has survived its single-minded dedication to favourite son Mozart. But, and how often does this happen? I remember most a brief episode in a smaller place, Graz. We found a beaut little pension. 40 euros, pay Marguerite in the morning, see you in the bar for a beer, mind your head on the doorbeam. Strolled among kids playing in a green leafy park, followed three fascinating city walks, and still had time for an excellent lunch in a sun-drenched courtyard. Graz, thanks for the memory. By now, other memories were being jogged. Emails from New Zealand told of growing grandchildren, kofis in flower, and barbecues in the garden. Time to go home? Yes, after one last jaunt. We were to collect our camper van in Derby. "Sorry," said the nice young man, "the new Toyota got dinged on Friday. Will this do instead?" Certainly. The old Volkswagen Kombi was rather battered, had done plenty of miles, but could chug along steadily provided she had a rest every so often. Rather like her passengers, we thought, as we set off northwards. Marjorie likes little islands, so Orkney, almost at the top of Scotland, was top of our list, with others along the way. The first, the Isle of Arran, showed us a lovely sunset over the Mull of Kintyre, but the next island, frankly, was a disappointment. Iona has a heritage of pilgrimage and Celtic mysticism, but it was difficult to get the remotest whiff of that as we struggled, heads down into driving wind and rain, from car park to the bleak grey cafeteria, which we'd have missed had it not had all its lights on at 11 a.m. The lobster chowder was excellent. Without it, we might have perished on the grim walk back to the Kombi. I cannot think why we then agreed to a launch trip to the tiny island of Staffa, but I'm so glad we did. The weather lifted, the sea calmed, and soon we were sliding into the majestic vaulted cathedral of Fingal's Cave. I'd never been there before. It's a tribute to Mendelssohn's music that I thought I had. We were late leaving Fort William the next morning. We'd breakfasted with Andrew, a biologist who'd been on the Hebrides trapping mink, which feed on birds' eggs and chicks. We swapped notes about introduced predators. Andrew told us how he disliked mink and magpies, and Beatrix Potter and Kenneth Graham, whose books, he said, have made generations of British children so sentimental about grey squirrels and rabbits that it's hard to get them to support pest control. If it was up to me, I'd burn their books, every one of them. On up the Great Glen we went to Inverness, where, of course, we had to visit Culloden. It's surprisingly small, say 4 rugby pitches, and on a drizzly evening it was easy to picture the benighted Highlanders making their last miserable stand before clever, organised Cumberland cleaned them out. By noon the next day, the John O'Groats ferry was taking us into another war zone, Scarpa Flow, the great lagoon where the German fleet was scuttled after World War I and the Royal Oak sunk by a daring U-boat in World War II. Orkney was more Norse than Scots, hardly a tree to be seen on long stretches of paddock and coastline reminiscent of Wellington. We admired St. Magnus Sandstone Cathedral, 900 years old, and looked into 5,000-year-old stone houses, with fridge space, platform beds and ensuite loo. Linfield Hotel offered us all that, plus a 4-poster bed in a vast room overlooking the North Sea, and, as one would expect, a muckle breakfast of porridge, kippers, toast and tea. Driving down Scotland, we found reminders of books, bits of history, and names that folk carried with them when they were driven out by poverty, clearances, and Sassenachs. Signposts to Aviemore, Glenorchy, Methven, Huntley, and Hamilton. Then Rob Roy's grave, Stirling and William Wallace. Into Edinburgh, memories of Robert Louis Stevenson. A bypass to Roslyn Chapel, where tourists hunted clues to the Da Vinci Code. And then Melrose and Abbotsford, with Tyers and Merrys hanging in the library, where Sir Walter Scott wrote the Waverley novels. The combi droned us south to Longtown in Cumbria, where we knocked on the door of an old stone house. Joe and Eileen Graham weren't surprised to hear Ian Johnston had been born in their home. The village is infested with Johnstons, and Grahams, Croziers, Armstrongs, descendants all of the Reavers who for centuries fought over the debatable lands, which neither England nor Scotland could control. In Carlisle, the border city where I was brought up, I found news of friends not seen for 50 years. Three of them, Margaret, Hunter, and Reg, I won't take this name-dropping any further, are famous authors living in the Lake District. In Cockermouth, we sat in the bar at the Trout, sipped half pints, yes, age has affected all of us, and reminisced about youthful escapades and whatever became of Mike. And didn't Jenny go to America? It was a suitable enough finale, a time to say thanks to Britain and its people for the long-ago gift of a happy boyhood, and, at the other end of my life, the chance to rediscover my homeland and explore some of the Europe to which it now firmly belongs.